for an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here, even stronger than the coffee.
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Klug.
On our special May the 4th coffee chat, we bring in two of our favorite guests and two huge favorites in Star Wars fandom, Mark Newbold and Ed Dalista. Mark first joined us on show number 4 and is co-owner of the world's best Star Wars news site, Jedi News UK, as well as contributor to the UK's biggest free newspaper, The Metro, and a writer for the official Star Wars blog, Star Wars Insider, and co-host to Rebel Force Radio's 1138. Ed first joined us on show number 6 and is one of the best, most influential podcasters out there. His incredible podcast, The IndieCast, is the world's best Indiana Jones podcast, and he has over 184 episodes so far. Ed continues to bring outstanding coverage of the world's greatest adventurer, Indiana Jones, to listeners, and is a staple of any podcast listener. Both of these gentlemen have impacted the show in countless ways. We are thrilled to have them share a cup of coffee with us to celebrate May the 4th, Coffee with Kenobi style. Welcome, Mark and Ed.
Thank you very much. What a lovely introduction.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, it's true. We've had this in the making for many, many, many months now. Of course, Ed being in Australia and Mark being in the UK, we're dealing with some major time zone differences here. So right now it's about 4 o'clock in Illinois, and Ed, it's a little after 7 a.m. And Mark, for you, it's about a little after 10 o'clock. Is that correct?
That's right. That's it. Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, let's just jump in right now. The reason we had to have you both on at the same time to bring this to all the stars aligned is that we love Harrison Ford. You guys are the biggest Indiana Jones and Han Solo fans that we know. We had to have you on here. So we're just going to go ahead and start off with some questions about these amazing characters.
All right, guys.
Let's go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. For our first question for you guys, we'll go ahead and start. We'll start with Ed, and kind of you can give us your answer, and then we'll go to Mark. For our first question, what is it about Harrison Ford that brings life to these two amazing, iconic, cinematic characters?
All right. Well, I was thinking about this, and I think it's Harrison Ford. He's got that everyman quality about him as an actor, that no-nonsense quality. You know, you wouldn't mess with him, and I think it's the same with those iconic characters and actors such as Humphrey Bogart or Charlton Heston or Jimmy Stewart. And he's just got that thing that he's a you know, superstar, but he's a very accessible superstar. And I think he brings that sort of realism and approachability to a character that makes us really connect as viewers.
I totally agree. I've got to say, I totally agree, because Harrison Ford, of all the actors that are still acting today, it feels like there's a connection to the great actors of the 40s. So like you say, Humphrey Bogart, you know, you think African Queen, you think Raiders of the Lost Ark. So it's got that kind of vibe. He's got that world-weary, been there, seen it, done it kind of vibe about him. You wouldn't argue with him in a bar fight, but you want him backing you up if you ever got into one. You know, he's totally there. He's suave when he wants to be suave. Other movies that he's done, you know, Sabrina film, he can be romantic if he wants to be a romantic. You know, he can be cocky, he can be smart. He's got it all. And for those two roles, you know, his signature roles of Indy and Han Solo, I can't imagine anybody else. I know, you know, Tom Selleck was down for Indy. He would have done a great job, because Tom Selleck's a great actor. He was Magnum PI. He would have been fantastic, but nobody can really do it like Harrison Ford. And that's always going to be the problem as the years roll forward. Not that you could ever replace Harrison in any role, but sort of succeeding him, it's going to be a massive challenge for whoever tries to fill those shoes. But yeah, he's a unique actor, and whatever he's got, I wish I'd got it, because I'd be a happy guy if I did. So
he's the icon. It's the swagger. I know that we've talked about this a lot before, but I can't imagine anyone else playing Indiana Jones, and clearly that is going to have to happen at some point. I can't imagine anyone will ever recast for Han Solo, because I feel like after these new films, we probably won't see too much of Han Solo on screen. Well, I guess Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. Who knows what will happen with standalone films? But I don't know about you guys. For me personally, I have a harder time seeing someone else be Indiana Jones than I do having a time seeing someone else be Han Solo. What do you guys think?
Gosh, I haven't even thought of anyone else being, you know, Han Solo apart from Harrison Ford. I certainly can. I think we've been with, you know, the Young Indy series, with River Phoenix. You know, we're sort of a little bit more used to seeing Harrison Ford at different stages of Harrison Ford. See, they're interchangeable. Right. Indiana Jones at different stages of his life. So I think we're a little bit more used to that. And I suppose he fits that James Bond, you know, a revolving door of actors a little bit better.
Indy as a character, I can see him being Disney James Bond, if you want to put it in those terms. I can see other actors walking in. As you say, Sean Patrick Flannery and, you know, and the other actors who've for the various ages have always had to have that essence of Indy, as if that's something you can pick off a shelf, which of course you can't, but but Hansel, I think it would be, yeah, I agree, I think it'd be trickier to imagine somebody else in the role of Han Solo. And I also kind of think that whoever replaces or whoever also plays Han Solo in any other project, they're almost going to have to do a Harrison Ford impression, whereas to do Indy, because it's a broader character or a more, not a broader character, but there's more to the palette of Indiana Jones than there is of Han Solo. Han Solo is more of a one-note character. I think Harrison said that. You know, to do Solo, you kind of need to be able to almost to do Harrison Ford, whereas to be Indy, you don't. So there's different shades to the characters, definitely.
Well put.
Well said. I'm glad you said that, too. And it, what did you see, of course, his recent Reddit? Yes, that was pretty classy. And I think the way he handled that interview, it's just sort of a natural swagger that he carries into some of his characters. You saw that on display perfectly in that interview process, especially with how he handled the Han shoot first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think with Harrison Ford, he introduced these characters to us as fans, and he built these characters into our fandom. And so it's like we always can only see him in that role. You guys put it very well when you said it was – He made the character. He you know, if somebody else was to come in and be Indiana Jones, he'd have to have a little bit of an essence, a ruggedness of Harrison Ford, and of course of Han Solo. I don't know who else would play them. It'd be difficult, but
yeah, if it's just as simple as growing a beard, I could be Indiana Jones. But it takes much more than that. I know what you're saying about James Bond, Robin Hood, and all these kind of characters, even the Batman. But there's something about Han Solo and Indiana – I'm sorry, Harrison Ford. You see, even I can Harrison Ford and Indiana Jones, they're pretty hard to separate. It's going to take quite a coup. I have faith that Kathleen Kennedy could do it, and thank goodness we're going to get a chance to see that. But let's talk a little bit more about Han Solo. Why is he such a fascinating character to fans after all this time? Mark, let's start with you.
Wow, that's a good question. Why is Han – he's cocky. He's arrogant. I've got my own thoughts about Han Solo in that he's a reluctant hero. You know, he didn't really get dragged into a last thing. He was quite happy. I think Han kind of enjoyed being in debt to Jabba. You know, it kind of gave him something to aim for. You know, he's a great talker. He can sell anything. Han would have you believe he was the best pilot. He was the best shot. He was the best smuggler. He was the best romantic. Han Solo could sell and to the Jawas. You know, he was that. He was a brilliant self-promoter, and I think people kind of like that because he's a braggart. As those films move on, you know, I've seen episode 5, he falls in love, he gets turned into a coffee table at the end, you know, friends come back and save him. You know, there's this whole redemption arc. I mean, okay, we could stray into the handshot first line we've just mentioned before that kind of alters that arc, but nevertheless, he goes from being a guy that's very self-centered. And he's centered by his relationship with Chewbacca. I think Chewbacca is Han Solo's conscience to a large degree, especially in earlier films. To the point of, you know, he basically gives his hot rod to the guy that turned him over in the previous movie and said, like, see, and Lando can take the glory because Lando gets off on that kind of thing. So he really is, in a way, I mean, you could say that in many ways, C-3PO is almost the most human character in the Star Wars movies because he really does wear his emotions on his sleeve. Han Solo grows the most he has, the, I would say, the biggest arc, whilst Anakin has a redemption arc, Luke has a hero's journey, Han Solo kind of has a similar arc in that it goes less, and I think people kind of see that in the character.
Yeah, and when you would come on before, you had mentioned the idea of Han Solo's redemption, and I never thought of it that way until you had explained that, and I definitely think that's strong. I like that you said he's the most human character, perhaps, in the original trilogy. Ed, how do you feel about Han Solo?
Oh, look, I mean, like any kid in 1977, I started off as a Luke Skywalker fan, but I slowly turned as I got a little bit older to Han Solo. I mean, he's that Lancer character, you know, the character that we all want to be and all the girls want to be with. And he's got everything. He's good looking. He's quick with a retort. He's even quicker with a blaster, and he's got that edginess to him. And I think that really, you know, appeals to people. He doesn't play by the rules, but, he's got that, you know, scruffy exterior, but underneath he's got that, you know, heart of gold, or glitterstim or whatever it is under there. You know, sorry, I just had to throw that in so people at least think I have some Star Wars cred. So, you know, he's got the cool spaceship. He's got the cool sidekick. What's not to, he rocks a vest. You know, what's not to love about Han Solo?
You've got quite the collection of Millennium Falcons too, don't you?
I do. I've got a big, let me preface that. I've got a big Star Wars collection, but Star Wars with Han Solo and Millennium Falcons, I do love, yes. And I'm looking forward to those new Disney Han Solo figures they've just released, those talking ones. That's going to be very exciting.
It'll be very fun. And I know that Mark's been polishing up his Star Wars collection quite a bit as well.
Yeah, I've been posting a few things on Twitter, just as a little journey thing, really, you know, because I'm like all of us have been collecting since we were kids, sort of thing. So I've managed to get our loft converted into a room up there. So I'm just sort of taking pictures as I'm getting things sorted out, and it's taking a while, but it's fun. I don't have a collector focus, a specific focus on what I collect. I get bits of everything. But I am enjoying doing that at the moment. It's good fun.
Oh, it's great. I think we're all in that boat. In fact, I think Corey might be the most casual collector of the four of us. Is that true, Corey?
That's true, yeah. That's true. I do envy you guys and all your stuff. It's a good time, and I know you guys love having a passion for all that stuff. I love it. I love just talking to you guys today about all this stuff. And what you brought up, Mark, about Han being kind of his arc and stuff was fascinating. I loved it. Sitting here thinking, we're looking at some of our questions here. We had one that came up that was, do you believe that Han Solo is two-dimensional in Return of the Jedi? Kind of a backseat driver, if you will, as long as episode six went on. As far as I know, it was kind of like they were supposed to. You know, the rumor is Han Solo was supposed to die in Empire Strikes Back, and they kept him alive, and I think Harrison Ford kind of wanted out in a little bit, but they kind of reeled him back in and had him play Han Solo one more time, and I think that for me it was more of like he seemed like he was a little bit dry in some of his scenes and things like that. But does that make him less of a character arc or less of appealing as a character in Return of the Jedi?
I don't think so. I was just going to say I was 13 when Return of the Jedi came out, and I never thought, gee, Han's character arc and through line have, you know, gone a non-Stanislavskian turn and, you know, really added to the two-dimensionality. I just thought, he's Han Solo. He's pretty cool. And, oh, my gosh, will he survive Jabba? And there he is. He's, you know, for me, I think I've still got that 13-year-old feeling, you know. I don't find that he – I think the sort of the story shifted, obviously, a little bit towards to Luke and Darth for me as when I was watching it, but I never thought that his character was two-dimensional. I mean, I probably thought his character was a little bit two-dimensional to start with, but you know, it's a science fiction fantasy. It's not, you know, Schindler's List we were watching. So
that's a good point, actually. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he wasn't the most multi-dimensional character anyway, and I think fans as well, you know, and books and novels and comics or levels to the character that probably weren't even there on the page. And Harrison Ford as an actor adds a hell of a lot of depth to the character just by the little smirks and nuances and looks to the camera and all sorts of stuff that Harrison does just builds the character up anyway. But yeah, I mean, I Jedi, yeah, it's probably the weakest turn for Han Solo in Jedi, but he still gets that call to Milando and he gives him Vulcan. But yeah, I think, I mean, I suppose the comparison could be if you look at Empire, and Empire is substance over style, and Jedi is style over substance. So there's probably more weight to Empire in terms of character building, character relationships, and Jedi, but then Jedi is the big payoff. So it kind of evens itself out in the end.
And really, Empire really is, it's Luke's story, but it's also Han's story. His arc is fairly well done. He's still an important part of the saga, so we want to see what happens. He's still got some great lines. He still does some heroic things. He's still important, but actually did a great job on this. I'm sure you both heard recently on an episode of Full of Sith where they talked about Han Solo, and some of the guys really thought that he had lessened himself as a character, but I don't think so. I think he fell in love, and gentlemen, we know what love does. It changes you. Your focus becomes a different thing. So the swagger is still there, but it's focused in a different direction. He's more hourly focused instead of hourly focused. So it does show growth. He's not the most important character in those three films. That really is Luke and Vader's story, and that's why it goes the direction that it does.
Well said.
And of course, that being said, I'd love to see more Han Solo, but if anything, the weakest link in Jedi is probably Princess Leia, but that's probably a show for another time.
Well, you're just rounding things up, aren't you?
Okay, so let's shift back to Indy. What makes Indiana Jones so fascinating to fans? And this is a guy that's, even though he doesn't have the marketing that the Star Wars juggernaut does, everyone knows that iconic hat and bullwhip, that silhouette. Why is he still so fascinating to us after all these years?
Gosh, I mean, look, again, I think it's a combination of things with Indy. It's that love of adventure where everyone wants to go on this fantastic adventure along with him. It's the character that George Lucas created. It's the voice that was given to him by Lawrence Kasdan. It's Jim Steranko's pulp look that he was given with a hat, and Deborah Nadelman, who was a costume designer. It's obviously Harrison Ford's portrayal of him as well. It's the way Steven Spielberg chose to, reveal the character. It's John Williams' theme. There's so many things that make Indy such a beloved character. But really, ultimately, I think it's, Harrison Ford's portrayal, and just again, it's that character's journey that we follow him on, the adventures where that everyman sensibility that Indiana Jones has. He's not like certainly not like the earlier James, maybe the Roger Moore James Bond, who, got punched up, but never, there was no real consequences. When Indy gets punched, you feel it, you feel it, every punch and every shudder in the road when he's in a truck chase or when he's being dragged by along, in Tannis and things like that. He's a vulnerable character and you can relate to that. And I think that's, he's just that little bit out of reach from everyone. We could be him, if we were thrown into it and had, was 6'4" and had good stubble. And
maybe if we got on each other's shoulders, we could be both 6'4".
That's right. I mean, but there's a lot of, I think that's what makes him fascinating. Well, how still today, obviously, we're obviously talking about Indiana Jones. He doesn't have the, as you mentioned, he doesn't have, I suppose he's not as he's very high profile, but not as I suppose universally loved as Star Wars is, as Indiana Jones, but yet he still keeps on going like a bad penny. I hate to use a quote, but he'll always turn up.
My least favorite line in that all four of those Indiana Jones films.
That's why I put it in there for you.
I know. I knew you did. I could sense that. My spider sense was tingling. Oh, wrong thing. Mark, what is it for you about Indiana Jones? That, of course, is our Indiana Jones expert. I think he nailed it, but Mark, what do you think?
I agree with everything that Ed just said. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's not many characters.
I've always liked really you, Mark.
There's really not that many characters that you can recognize from their silhouette. Mickey Mouse. And there's not many, and Indiana Jones is one of he's iconic just by looking at the guy, and Spielberg, as you say, framed it so beautifully at the start of Crystal Skull with the shadow and, so many moments that you just go, yeah. But yeah, Indy, he's an academic, but he's an adventurer. He's well-traveled, but he likes his home comforts. There's a little bit of everything in Indy. He wow, I mean, he is like an everyman character. That's a commonly used phrase, but he really, really is, because, you know, when, as Ed said, you know, when Indy gets punched, he's one of the few characters in film when he gets punched, him and John, you know, he takes the bruises, he takes the lumps, he keeps getting up. He's like the T-1000, he just keeps getting up and keeps coming, and he doesn't give up. And as movie characters go, that's gold dust. How many single characters? I mean, it's kind of a fair comparison comparing Indiana Jones to Star Wars, because and people do, because they're both George's babies. But, you know, Star Wars is a cast of you know, a lot of characters and a heck of a lot of peripheral characters, and so many, like, not just locations geographically around a globe, but globes, you know. So it's just a vast different scale, whereas Indy really is centered around Indy, for the most part, with a few, you know, few characters that tag along, Dol. But, you know, I think if you could really, there was a way of bottling what makes Indy work so well, the Mummy movies would still be being made with Brendan Fraser, you know, would have had 10 Romancing the Stones. you can't make these things up, you know, lightning in a bottle kind of thing. Crystal Skull was a great film. I love Crystal Skull. It didn't quite capture what Raiders captured, but then what has, nothing ever since Raiders has captured what Raiders had, not even the other indie sequels. So, but as a character in Indiana Jones, he's pretty irresistible.
Good point. Yeah, and I agree with that. He's just got, like you said, the vulnerability. And I think one of the things that's even as endearing about that is the fact that he gets annoyed. Like, he's visibly annoyed with what's going on around him, but he still keeps on fighting through. That's so endearing. And there are millions of action heroes out there and kung fu and all this kind of stuff, but nobody has that affability, that likability, that sensibility that Harrison Ford brings. And that is, again, why I'm beating this dead horse as I'm chasing after the Ark and the truck. It's just going to be hard to capture that, because Harrison Ford has that certain something, that je ne sais quoi, that you just can't bottle. And if you could, all four of us would be drinking it and we'd be walking around beating people up.
And he's making it up as he goes along. That's the thing about it.
That's right.
Other movie characters, it's bad scripting as well. It's the way it's written. The movie, they've got, they're six steps ahead. Indy's not six steps ahead. Indy's reactive. He's not proactive in that respect. So Indy will react to a situation. But though, on top of himself, Jody gets through it, gets scrapes, but he, you know. But I think there's charm to that as well, that he really is just, he's doing it all on the fly.
Right. And the academic part of it, of course, I love, and I know I'm sure it does too, as well as the fact that he's physically capable, but he's got that intelligence that carries him to the next pantheon of heroes.
That's right. Just like us, Dan.
That's exactly right. I knew I didn't want to say it, but of course I was thinking it.
So we've been talking about Indiana Jones, and of course we've had four films in existence. How does Indiana Jones evolve throughout those films? Obviously, he gets a little older. We know this, but as a character, how does he evolve for you guys? And how does he show his genuine growth as a character?
Well, I think, you know, certainly at the start of Raiders, when we're first introduced to him, you know, he's a character in the shadows. You know, he does that wonderful reveal where you see him for the first time. You don't know really if he's a good guy or a bad guy. And he's from that fantastic opening sequence, you sort of get the sense maybe he's more of a grave robber than an actual, you know, archaeologist. He's unsentimental when he's talking about Forrestal. He doesn't call him a colleague. He's a competitor, implying, you know, it's a race to get the golden idol. It's not about the pursuit of knowledge. It's about getting the item. You know, he's about that fortune and glory. You know, he's unsympathetic rather when Satipo, you know, dies. He's just there. Go to the next thing, to the next thing, the next thing. He's you know, not taken aback by his death. He's a tough customer. And even I think when Indy's talking to Major Eaton and Colonel Musgrove about the Ark, you can see that sort of in his eyes. And I think Marcus sees it as well, that sort of not greed, but that spark there for the next adventure. And that only changes once Marion and well, originally Abner, but obviously Marion gets into the picture with the Staff of Ra. She's just a means to an end to get the headpiece to the Staff of Ra. But that changes when it's less about the Ark It happens right at the end. It's less about the arc, but his main concern finally comes back to Marion and saving their lives. So I think in Raiders, obviously see that character progression, and then sort of things go a little bit different in Temple of Doom, because obviously that's a prequel and we see a different sort of Indiana Jones. You know, he's that playboy, the James Bond-esque sort of rogue who's, you know, he's after like fortune and glory, as he states. And but by the end of that film, you know, he's not after the fortune and glory. He's there rescuing the enslaved children, and he understands that there's the power of the Shankara stones as well. And he then changes. His character changes, and he says to Willie, you know, it's a long way to Delhi. Anything can happen. And then, of course, we go back technically to Raiders of the Lost Ark, where he's hard-edged, which I can only guess that time with Willie Scott is enough to turn anyone back to his
old place. Well, and also tying into that, incorporate his spiritual. Do you consider him to be sort of a believer, if you will, or not a believer, and then he becomes one? Or how do you follow his?
He's a skeptic to start with, I think. He doesn't believe. You know, it's just a item made by whoever that he wants for the museum, but certainly during Raiders, he doesn't really see the power of God, I guess, does he?
Yeah.
Up to that point, he could have thought, well, something happened. It doesn't have to be the hand of God or anything like that. But certainly during Temple of Doom, you know, he does say he understands its power with the Shankara stones. He sees a guy's heart ripped out by Mola Ram, and he's still alive. So he does understand. You know, he does start to become a believer, but even in Last Crusade, when he's got to take that leap of faith, you know, he takes that breath, and you know, you can see him going, "Oh, geez, you know, I'm not sure he can do it." But I think he does. He's seen enough to believe that there is some higher power, there is something going on. Then you get to Crystal Skull, where does he believe aliens? I think after everything he's seen, he's going, "Of course, why not?
Yeah, why not?"
I believed it.
Absolutely. Mark, what about you?
He was more shocked in Crystal Skull that Mutt was his son.
I would be too.
I still love the dynamic of those two. It still reminds me of Connery and Ford in Last Crusade.
I agree, and I do. I really love. I really love the that scene in the
Why didn't you finish school? That part.
No, that's great, but I love that quicksand.
Oh, I did too.
And everything rapport is really good. That, you know,
perfect.
It is underrated.
Mark, what about you? How do you feel about Indiana Jones' evolution through the films? I don't think he suffers the same "quote unquote" fate that Han Solo does in Return of the Jedi, or does he?
No, I agree with everything that Ed did in English accent.
Are you making fun of my English accent, mate? What's going on?
Not at all. It's a really good question. It's not something I'd ever really considered, really. In the same way as Solo, I think Solo's arc is more. I think Star Wars: Empire and Jedi are one story chopped in three, whereas the Indiana Jones movies are more like the earlier Bond movies, where they're episodic. Mm-hmm. That was always the impression I got. So I never got the feeling that the Indy was really supposed to develop or change too much. And I like what Ed said about, you know, obviously when you see Indy in Raiders for the first time, bearing in mind Temple of Doom's a prequel, they never really got why George did that, other than he didn't want to use Marion, and he didn't, you know, it's the only reason I could ever really think of.
But
that Indy was kind of the center of the storm of everything that was happening in the movies. But then you get to Last Crusade and his dad turns up and Indy becomes a completely different character because, you know, all of a sudden he's junior and, oh no, they're calling me Henry. And, you know, so there's all that awkwardness being, you know, being the son. And I actually posted something just as a little aside to that, and it just caught me out the other day thinking about the fact that Harrison Ford is now 13 years older than Sean Connery was when Sean Connery played his dad in Last Crusade, and Connery was only 12 years old. So how he got away with playing his dad really is just kind of mind blown when you think Ford is now that much older than Connery was at the time. But there you go, that's just me playing with numbers, because then all of a sudden Indy is to what Henry was to Indy, if that makes sense, in Last Crusade. Yeah, I think Indy is driven in, certainly in first two, by, if not fortune or knowledge and adventure, because he didn't shy away from taking these awkward missions, if you like. And he's all about knowledge. He wants to learn. He's a voracious, he's always taking things on. We know he can speak, can get by multiple languages. He's a very knowledgeable guy. You see that in Last Crusade, his dad kind of drilling things into him. So I suppose if there's any development, it's the realization he is important, because, at the start, in Last Crusade, when Henry and Indy kind of comes together, and it's like, when was the last time we had a milkshake? I was, 12? Kind of conversation. they were cold and distant, and they weren't as close as they should have been, and they did rely on each other, but then they kind of shut each other out to a degree. Indy in Crystal Skull kind of has that bristly relationship with Mutt, but then pretty, by the end of the film, we've realised that, we are a family, me and Marion are together, and we're all together, and it works. So I guess if there's any development in character in that respect, I would say Indy realizes that family is probably more important than fortune and glory and adventures. Yes. and anything else.
And a lesson he learned, like you said, sort of opposite of how his father did. Well, actually, they're similar, but there's just that realization, hey, I want to be the dad that I kind of wish that I had. And then he's also at that point in his life made peace with his father, and they clearly had a positive relationship before he went on to the next life. So, and I think that's why Harrison Ford, when he portrays Indiana Jones, there's just a little more, there's more depth there. He's still, he's not Hamlet either, but he's still got those layers to him that are just fascinating that I hope we get to visit again and again.
Yeah, yeah.
Corey, what about you? How do you feel about Indiana Jones's evolution?
Well, you guys have kind of said it all. I feel like out of my league, but, yeah, definitely his evolution for the films is well done. It comes down to, like we've been saying, Harrison Ford plays the character too. It's just in the different situations. He's with Marion in the first movie, and he's kind of the hard edge, like Ed said, and he's just kind of rough, and we get introduced to him. And then second movie, like I said, is a prequel, so he's kind of laid back a little bit more, kind of in on his own and doing his thing, but he's got a Short Round with him, so he's kind of taking him underneath his wing a little bit and kind of showing the ropes a little bit as far as going on an adventure. And then, of course, we're paired up again with Sean Connery, and like Mark stated perfectly, was that, he's kind of being jerked around a little bit and kind of like, Dad, leave me alone, you mess with me, and I'm trying to impress these Nazi women and whatnot, so... it's interesting. And then, of course, the last movie he's paired up with his kind of his son, in a sense, and reunited with Marion. And it's different angles that we see, different facets of Indiana Jones. And like we've been talking this entire time, Harrison Ford does a great job on every movie, every film, and just portraying that character in every instance and every adventure. And I can't wait to see what else they're going to do and how further they're going to go for, as far as his adventures and what Harrison Ford could bring us next.
So that being said, guys, and Corey and I have been sort of debating this question back and forth, but we'll just go ahead and go ask it. But what do you foresee as the future for both of these characters, and what do you hope you will get to see with both of these characters in the future?
Well, I certainly hope we get to see, obviously, more Indiana Jones and Han Solo. And I think I've said it before, I think it's inevitable we will see some form of Indiana Jones, whether it will be, again, as a prequel with a younger actor, whether it's an animated series a la Rebels or the Clone Wars. I think the character is too beloved to let go. And I know there's a lot of films where you sort of go, why did my wife always goes, why are they making another Spider-Man? Why can't they just leave it? And I've said about, superhero fatigue and things like that. But I think there are some characters that like Robin Hood, that we need to have these stories, different generations get told. So I think we'll certainly see something of Indiana Jones in the future. Again, get Harrison Ford. He is Harrison Ford. Of course he is. He's Han Solo. He is Indiana Jones, and he's still got it. He can still, yeah. He'll be 90, and I reckon we'll still be able to see it. I'm just interested in Episode 7. Are they going to deck Han Solo out still in his regular waistcoat, like he hasn't, you know, changed for 35 years. Because that's such an iconic look. It's like changing Indiana Jones, you know, oh, we'll change his hat or we'll change whatever. It just won't work. And I'm just interested, wonder what they're going to do with Han Solo. Will they put him in his Empire Strikes Back sort of jacket, or how are they going to change his – changes look, his hair, will he have his 70s hairstyle? It's going to be really interesting, I think. Or are we just going to see, I'm sorry, that's Harrison Ford up there on the screen.
Or maybe in between Jedi and episode 7, he's met Mork and he's went to his planet. He's going to wear what Mork wears.
You mean, oh, fantastic. Those rainbow striped suspenders.
Yes, that would be wonderful.
Nanu Nanu. Excellent.
Mark, how about you? How do you foresee the future of these two awesome characters?
Good question. I would like to. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm pretty sure Disney are going to give. I'm really hopeful that Harrison gets at least one more crack of the whip at Indy. I think they will. I think it makes sense to finish off a sort of a second, more up to date later on in his career sort of trilogy. So I can see the logic of that. That would be nice. Certainly, nowadays with effects being what they are and so on and so forth, I could see the benefits and logic of either doing an indie TV series, but more of an action series, more than the Young Indie Chronicles was, you know, which was more of a knowledge, you know, sort of a history journey type series, but more of an action adventure series. I can see some benefits to that. But recasting, going right back maybe to the 20s with a younger actor playing Indy. And like we said earlier, kind of just treating Disney can treat Indy like they're Indiana Jones and, you know, do four or five films with one guy and then just get a new guy. And you've got to cast it right. I mean, you don't want to distill what Ford brought to the role in the first place. Because as we've said, there's no way of getting around it. Harrison Ford is a massive, massive percentage of what Indiana Jones is. Like Ed said, you know, the costume design, the music, all those other elements, they can still be at play. They're the templates that are set, but Harrison Ford brings an intangible to the character. So you make sure that whoever you cast in that role can hit all the light and shade that he does and still make you feel like you're watching Indiana Jones, because nothing would pull you out of it quicker than just watching, thinking that's somebody doing a really bad Indiana Jones impression. So you don't want... Hans, on the other hand, yeah, I'm almost certain we're going to see Han Solo in episode 7 and hopefully later episodes. I think he's more than likely going to go out in a blaze of glory. And then George always said, steer clear of Han and Chewie meeting. You know, there's certain elements of Solo's earlier career that were, you know, persona non grata almost. You know, you sort of box them off and don't go near them. So I think there's probably some logic in there being, you know, a Han Solo standalone with obviously a younger actor. And then if it hits television, you know, the good thing about Star Wars, and kind of the good thing about Indy, is that, you know, if they want to make Indiana Jones movie set in the 1960s with Harrison Ford, great. If they want to go back and make earlier Indiana Jones movie set in the 20s with another actor, fine. Why not written one year, one the next? One TV series set in the 20s, one movie set in the 60s. Indy's career covered a lot of ground. And you could do the same with Han Solo if you wanted to. So really the potential is endless. And now they're both with Disney, that we're having this conversation. We wouldn't have had this conversation a couple of years ago, Indy and Star Wars being at Disney, but Disney can do what it likes. You know, it's the Magic Kingdom, isn't it? So hopefully they'll bring a bit of that magic back to us.
No, absolutely. From your mouth to Kathleen Kennedy's ears, they wouldn't spend that much money, you'd think, on these amazing characters without doing something with it. And I don't know about you guys, Mark, you kind of hit around to it with the Blaze of Glory thing, but there seems to be sort of a big assumption in fandom right now that if Han Solo comes back, he's going to die in the films, or Chewbacca's going to die in the films. To me, I don't understand why that's important. Not everything is Joss Whedon style where you surprise everyone by killing a main character. For me, I guess if it fits the narrative, I understand that. But I don't think it's imperative to have them die on screen. And I'm sure you both agree with me. I'm sure all of you agree with me on that. But why are people so driven by that point? Why can't we just let them kind of disappear the way of Jar Jar? We don't know what happens.
Yes.
That's a good
one. I believe Jar, isn't Ahmed Best signed up for episode 7 through 28?
I'm sure he
at
is.
At least with an option for 29.
Oh, great. Misa likey. I think, I agree. Why do we always need to, you know, kill our heroes? Can't they just go to the happy retirement home and we're happy. You know, they did it with Kirk not so well in, you know, Star Trek Generations, and really he didn't die. Well, he did, I suppose, at the very end. Spoiler if you haven't seen that. But I think I agree. Let's just let them – they can live. You know, these are beloved characters, and I don't think you need to – as you said, you don't need to just make a statement by killing them off. Just for either shock value. I mean, it's got to propel the story. I mean, if Ben Kenobi, when he died in episode four, you know, that was to propel the story. That was necessary. But you know, I can understand if Han does go out in a bit of a blaze of glory. I can see. Just please don't let him not total the Millennium Falcon. That's
right.
Thought, Mark, what do you feel about this idea that Han Solo might or should die in Episode 7, or Chewbacca, for that matter?
Yeah, good point. I mean, I think people think about Chewie dying because he died in Vector Prime, which of course is now Legends as opposed to EU. Mm-hmm. I'm never part of the canon anyway. In terms of Han Solo, yeah, I think it all pretty much springs from the fact that people learned very quickly that Han Solo was Han Solo. We keep doing this, don't we? Harrison Ford was kind of maybe weary, slightly of the character at the time. You know, he'd done Blade Runner, and that felt more meaty to him as a role, and he was ready to sort of move on to other things. And people forget, you know, Harrison Ford was in his early 40s by the time of Jedi, so you know, he was probably ready to tackle other things. And you know, it was only a couple of years after Jedi he got his only Oscar nomination for Witness. So you know, in that respect, Mosquito Coast was a meaty role, so you can kind of understand it. But I think it's probably led by the fact that people expect the character to go because Harrison Ford said he's got no mama, he's got no papa, he, you know, he's not an important character, let's take him out. And of course, early drafts of Jedi had, you know, Han potentially going, Lando going, the Falcon getting blown up, you know, and of course George was overwhelmed by cuddliness of the Ewoks, and everybody lived happily ever after. So it didn't happen. So, but I don't think there's any need to do that. There's other characters. I don't think there's any need to kill Han Solo off. Like you say, he can ride up into the sunset, retire, go to the old spacers home, as he used to say. So
that's right. Oh, absolutely. Now, so since this is our May the 4th episode, and we've had an amazing time talking about two of our favorite fictional characters, how are you guys planning on celebrating May the 4th this year?
Well, I know here in Australia, and I assume they're doing it in the States and possibly the UK, where they're having the May the 4th and May the 5th screenings of the all six Star Wars films. So the prequels on May the 4th and the original trilogy on May the 5th. So I'm going to be spending my time with some six Star Wars films and a couple of hundred people, I think.
Wow. That is, I wish they were doing that around here. Don't you, Corey?
Oh, absolutely. That'd be great.
Wow. What about you, Mark?
Well, I'm currently speaking to you from a convention that's happening tomorrow called Farthest From, down in the New Forest. So I'm here with the guys as they're setting that up. So we're doing that this weekend. Next weekend, I'm up in Burnley at an event called Star Wars Fan Fun Day. There's a whole bunch of Star Wars guests there. So that's what I'll be doing on May the 4th. I'll be recording bits for 1138 and doing all sorts of different bits and bobs. So it should be a busy Star Wars day, like every day.
Fun. That sounds great.
It'll be very fun. For us, we're having I'm chaperoning prom, and it's going to be a Star Wars prom, which I cannot wait for. So I'll be doing a blog about that for StarWars.com, but it's going to be awesome. Hopefully the 501st will be able to come out and join us, and that should be a really interesting way to celebrate May the 4th.
And are you dressing up as anyone?
I think I'm going to dress up as that suave, dashing English teacher you know and love so well, Dan Zare.
Dan Zare, chaperone.
That's right.
I don't know how proms work. I've only seen them in Greece and the movies. So
pretty much it. I have a big dance number I'm planning. In fact, I was going to ask you for some help at the big finale.
Oh, great. I'll teach you a box step once we get the Skype video working.
Perfect. All right, guys. Well, as we said at the top of the show, this has been a show that's been in the making for many, many years. And we're just so excited and so happy to have you both here. Two of the most fun, intelligent, entertaining guys in the podcasting world and in Star Wars fandom. So, Ed, Mark, we're so happy to share you guys with the listeners for this May the 4th celebration on Harrison Ford.
thanks so much for having us. I know it's been great talking with you guys, and it's been a real thrill.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and it's really cool actually just thinking that Ed, it's like 12 o'clock, and for me it's 10 o'clock, and you guys it's 4 o'clock, you know, it's like time travel, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
it's an international podcast.
There you go.
It really is. It truly is. Hopefully everyone has their passports ready for this episode. Well, Ed and Mark, how can our listeners get in touch with you both?
Oh, thank you. Certainly for the IndieCast, you can visit theindiecast.com if you want to comment on anything, or you can just send me an email at ed@theindiecast.com, and I will be happy to reply. And obviously, if you've got anything for the show, please send it in, and we pride ourselves on reading out everything, and you know, all your suggestions and news stories and just comments are always appreciated. So that's at ed@theindiecast.com.
And Mark, how about you?
Oh, for me, wow, there's a question. There's a few avenues. I'm generally out and out on Twitter, which is Jedi News 2010. You can catch us, if you want to get in touch with us regarding Radio 1138, it's info@jedinews.co.uk. You can also get me at mark@jedinews.co.uk. They're the best avenues. Always on the website, quite often Facebook, Jedi News on Facebook. And I also respond to Smoke Signal and Semaphore.
It's true. That's how we got him to be on today, actually. Well, thanks again, guys, so much. Have a wonderful May the 4th, and we look forward to talking with you both in the future.
Sounds good. Lovely to talk to you.
You too, thanks guys. Again. Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you both.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section, or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torok on iTunes.
I like the sound of that.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi, unless otherwise indicated.
There's no one here. Move along.